Welcome, everyone, to episode 3 of the Ringside Chat podcast. I'm Gary Freeland, and with me, as always, is Joey Kazvinsky and Court Montgomery. How you guys doing?
What's going on?
I'm pretty good. How about you guys?
Doing much better than last week.
We missed you.
I listened to the show. It definitely sounded like you missed.
Shut the fuck up. We tried, okay?
We at least missed your computer recording skills.
Yes.
Well, you had a special guest of the clicking, so that was good. He had a lot to say, so that was a benefit.
Oh yeah, I knew this is exactly how this shit was going to start off. You would be giving us shit.
That's all I got. I'm a one-trick pony. Just let me have it.
All right. Well, this is finally the review of Halloween Havoc 1995. I know we put the poll up on the Ringside Chat Facebook group, which if you haven't gone and joined us yet, please do. But guys, before we get into reviewing it, how'd everybody enjoy the show?
Oh, good lord.
I don't know if I would say enjoy it would be what I would say about it, but I got through it.
Right.
Yeah. I watched this at night, about 5 or 6 beers deep, and I fell asleep, I think, like halfway through, and then I woke up and was like, holy cow, what did I miss? And then I had to go back and rewatch it, restart it, and I was mad at myself for doing that. I should have just stayed asleep.
What's really scary about that, Joe, is very similar. I fell asleep during the entrance of Arn Anderson and Brian Pillman. So I was like, I think that's right at midway. All right, well, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. I don't know about you guys. I tried to do a little backtracking. I went on the network, and I watched at least the 4 episodes of Nitro before the pay-per-view. Before we get into the actual matches, I have a couple of notes here that were things that didn't happen, at least live, on the pay-per-view. So, one thing that stuck out to me was, at this time, Disco Inferno was doing a gimmick where they would cut to a match. They would go ahead and announce, so-and-so is wrestling so-and-so. And all of a sudden, Disco would come out, and he's doing his whole gimmick. He's on the stage, he's got his music playing, he's doing his disco dancing. I don't know why. I don't remember this shit. Like, in my head, he just started wrestling. This motherfucker was doing this shit where he was interrupting shit all the time. And I don't know why now, as an adult, this shit was hilarious to me. Do you guys remember Disco just randomly dancing and not doing shit else?
No, not at all. I don't remember that at all. I just remember him being on Saturday Night, like, doing, like, the curtain jerker matches. But I don't remember him on Nitro coming out and just randomly dance.
But yeah, Disco had this thing where it would be a regular scheduled match. Shivani would be, or Bischoff, would say, all right, we're going to, you know, whatever, Eddie Guerrero versus Chris Benoit. And fucking Disco's music would hit, and he would just go on stage and start dancing, and then someone's music would hit, and he would be pissed off that they cut him off from dancing. Speaking of which, so around this time is when WCW grabbed all the cruiserweights from around Mexico, got it from ECW and all that. One thing that I noticed was WCW was very guilty of reusing a lot of theme songs. So when Guerrero first debuted, his theme song was actually the one that was later used for Hoovy. And by the very next week, they switched his music, and that was the debut of Benoit. And Benoit had a pretty, like, it wasn't very big, but he had a vignette where he showed up to outside of an arena, and he was like, oh, well, this is WCW, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I thought it was kind of cool that they gave Benoit a cruiserweight, at least in their eyes at that time, kind of a cool vignette, and they let him come on TV. And what I don't remember, too, is he was actually wearing his Japan tights, his blue Pegasus Kid tights. Mm-hmm. I don't remember that shit at all. And then I later saw he was wearing some yellow ones that were very similar. I just remember him straight to being in the Four Horsemen, which I know was only, like, what, maybe a month after he debuted? But it was kind of cool to see that, you know, in the lead-up to this.
This is his second run in WCW, I believe. I definitely remember him having a shorter run, maybe a year or two prior to this.
And '93.
Yeah, he had a feud with Too Cold Scorpio. I remember that sticking out in my head when I was younger.
Uh-huh.
Those two going at it. It was something I had never seen before.
Yeah, I don't remember any match besides the one at Super Brawl 3 when he wrestled Scorpio in that singles match.
Yep, that's the one.
Yep, and he wore like those zebra tights. But yeah, you are right. But yeah, so before we started recording, it was brought to my attention. So do you guys have some notes on at least the dark matches from this show? Because my notes started at the very beginning of the pay-per-view.
I got the the match results here with me. All right. For the dark matches. The first one was Eddie Guerrero defeating Disco Inferno in about 3 minutes and 20-some-odd seconds of a match. Then I got Paul Orndorff defeating Ultimate Warrior Part 2, The Renegade, in 1:22.
Wow.
And then I got a very short. Then I got Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko defeating the Blue Bloods, which was Steven Regal and Earl Robert Eaton, in about 8 minutes and 41 seconds in a tag match. And then Craig Pittman defeating BK Wall Street in a singles match in about 3:30-some.
I would imagine that tag team match with Benoit and Malenko was probably better than 85% of this card, 90% of this card.
100% of this card.
Yeah. I was trying to be nice, but...
Yeah.
Not me, fuck it.
Yeah. Why that wasn't on here, I have no idea.
That's the thing that blows my mind, because, not to get ahead of ourselves, but that tag match, had that been on the thing, that might have beaten my match of the night, which was pretty much the first match, and after that, it all went down the hill.
And there was plenty of room on this show. There was so much filler on this show. Just
holy shit!
Oh, it was horrible. And they used Savage twice. They used Luger twice on here. You couldn't tell me you couldn't find 8.5 minutes for Malenko, hey. Benoit, and Regal and Eaton.
You probably could have done away with the Kurosawa versus Road Warrior Hawk, but that's just me.
That's true. Well, ahead, Gary.
No, I don't have anything.
No, fuck you. Nope.
I was just going to say, when you have your longest match is a Johnny B. Badd match, you give him 17 minutes. That itself is enough to say, okay, we could probably take 5, 6, 17 minutes away from him and give these other guys, you know, that can actually work a match.
100%. So that's a hell of a segue. So let's get into the pay-per-view, guys. So, you know, the show starts off with a video package, and the biggest thing they're hyping is this fucking monster truck sumo match, you know? They're showing stuff about, you know, Hogan and Giant at the beginning of the night. They're, like, playing chicken with each other, which I think is fucking weird. Like, it's a blood feud. Why are they playfully playing chicken with monster trucks? It's fucking stupid. One thing that I thought is very noteworthy is right before this, like, maybe a month or so, you know, this is when the whole issue with Vader happened and he left WCW. Am I the only one that noticed that that video package they showed, every clip was of Hogan beating up Vader?
Now that you mentioned it, it does stand out in my head from what I can remember of the video package.
I must have tuned out already at that point.
From what I saw online, the attendance for the event was about 13,000, which even for 1995 was down. I mean, business as a whole, for wrestling in general, had died down by this point. And it was, I mean, the numbers were down. I don't have the pay-per-view buys, but I know that from what I read, that just from, like, the year prior, when they did Hogan and Flair, the buys were down, like, I think, like, 70,000. Like, it's... This did not draw half as big as I thought it was going to.
I can't imagine them expecting a monster truck, sumo battle, whatever the hell you want to call it, drawing anything. I mean, they spent a ton of money on it because they got the guy from Bigfoot, which is like the Hulk Hogan of monster trucks. But the amount of money they had to spend on that segment, and I know we'll get to it, had to be astronomical with the helicopters and everything else.
Fuck yeah. So, show opens. Shivani welcomes us to Joe Louis Arena in Detroit. Him and Heenan, you know, they're hyping the main event. They also announced at the very beginning of the show that Pillman and Anderson attacked Flair the very beginning, and they have no idea what Flair's status is. Which, you know, as bad as WCW was starting to get at this point, you know, the Hogan era, we can talk all day about how bad it was. Thought it was neat that they start the angle at the beginning of the show to let you know, hey, Flair's hurt. We don't know if he's going to make it to the tag match. I thought that was cool that they did that, you know?
It was literally the only angle that was worth watching on the show, that match in itself. And, I mean, we'll get to it when we get to that part of the show. But, yeah, I agree. That was a nice little piece of business that they did at the beginning.
I will admit, when they opened the show and Shivani's there with Heenan, I was a little disappointed that those two did not dress up like the previous Halloween Havocs for Shivani and Ventura and them would dress up and stuff. I was bummed out about that.
They probably had to cut the budget back because of the helicopters and the monster trucks and everything else. They can't afford a $5 costume.
Dude, I want to say that those monster trucks costed them like $100,000 or something like that.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
And before I get to the first match, I do want to note that, okay, so let's go through real fast the champions leading into this pay-per-view. You had the World Heavyweight Champion was Hulk Hogan. The United States Champion was Sting. Television Champion was Diamond Dallas Page. The Tag Team Champions were Harlem Heat. It's very weird that they're nowhere to be found on this pay-per-view. No dark match, no pay-per-view match. The Tag Team titles are just fucking not there.
Booker's probably working on the Spinneroonie somewhere.
That's true. Well, they worked the last Nitro before Halloween Havoc against Sting and Luger. So, I don't know. To me, it was very weird they weren't there. So, let's go to match number one, Diamond Dallas Page versus Johnny B. Badd. The backstory to the match is, you know, we see the video package at the very beginning of the show. Johnny B. Badd had won this match, giving him a chance at the United States Championship against Sting. Well, they try to open WCW Saturday Night with Sting versus Johnny B. Badd, and Johnny B. Badd doesn't show up. So they're like, hey, well, maybe he's late. We're going to give him to the end of the night. Johnny B. Badd still doesn't show up to the U.S. title match. They give it to Pillman. Well, after the match is over, Johnny B. Badd shows up, and he's like, hey, you know, sorry, and Mean Gene's interviewing him. He's like, I had a flat tire. Something that stuck out to me was Gene gets pissed at him. He's like, well, why the fuck didn't you call us? You know, we could have known something. But Johnny B. Badd's like, hey, look, you know, I'm sorry I didn't have a phone. I didn't have this, yada, yada, yada. DDP comes out with Max Muscle. Who the fuck is Max Muscle? I don't remember him for shit.
That's all I thought about that entire match was, who the fuck is this guy with the red and black, like, zebra trunks on? He looked like Brackus. That's who I thought it was initially. And then I was, like, Googling on my computer trying to figure out who the hell this guy was. Yeah, Max fucking Muscle. I got all kind of notes on him.
They're talking DDP's giving him shit for missing his big opportunity. Max Muscle, being the dumb, big, muscular guy, goes, oh, it must suck. You know, he got four flat tires. And that's when Johnny B. Badd goes, four flat tires? I only said a flat tire. And then that's the whole video package, and that's what leads to this. What they did leave out, though, was 2 weeks before the pay-per-view, Johnny B. Badd and DDP had a match on Nitro. Almost. DDP comes out, Johnny B. Badd comes out behind him. Before he can have the match, DDP clocks him with the television title, which I thought was pretty noteworthy. You know, they set it up on Nitro. Now, I guess Nitro is still kind of new at this point. It's only a couple months old. But I thought it was really weird that's a hell of a moment showing, hey, look, DDP knocked this motherfucker out live on TV. They don't mention shit about that. Like, there's like a slight mention somewhere in there, but it's not in the video package. They're more concerned about the flat tires. That explains also why, if you guys noticed, DDP had the little fucking confetti gun.
I thought that was weird that he had that, but it's WCW, so I didn't really question it.
I messaged Gary while I was watching this match, and to piggyback on your build of this match, I wonder. Now, I know at the time Bill Dundee was in WCW and was working with the Blue Bloods. Now, he might have been done by now, but I read where he was helping booking some of the angles in the shows and stuff. And I know that in Mid-South, and Memphis. They did similar angles. Basically, the same thing with, like, the tires. I think one was with Austin Idol in Memphis, and I think another one was in Mid-South with DiBiase. I'm wondering, since Dundee was in both of those companies, I'm wondering if this was a Bill Dundee angle.
Possibly. I mean, it does scream, you know, his kind of style. When DDP comes out, the first thing I notice on this fucking pay-per-view is the Elvis Lives tombstone. Did you guys catch that?
No.
Little shit like that gets me. Does anybody know who came out? Because Johnny B. Badd comes out, but it's not Johnny B. Badd. Maybe it's Little Richard. Anybody know who the fuck came out on the entrance?
No.
But you know, he comes through the crowd.
Maybe it was Sable wearing his robe and stuff, and you just didn't get to see her face. Well, right. I'll admit, while I do like another match that goes on later down the card, I actually like this match.
I fucking hated it, Joe. What?
Oh, I hated this match so bad.
Given what's coming on down the line, I would much rather watch 17 minutes of Johnny B. Badd dancing around and beating up Diamond Dallas Page with his wife out there, or ex-wife, then watch some of these other matches. I mean, the crowd seemed really hot for Johnny B. Badd.
I will say that. They were hot for this match. I don't understand why at all. Maybe you had to be there, but I thought the match was boring as hell. I didn't really understand the build. It didn't make any sense for DDP to kind of do what he did to Johnny B. Badd with the whole stupid contrived car thing, flat tire thing. None of it made any sense. The match was boring. I spent most of the time researching this Max Muscle guy and staring at Kimberly's tits. That's about it.
I'm with you. I guess me and Gary are in agreement. Joe kind of liked it. I'm going to run down a couple of spots stuck out to me. You know, the very beginning, you know, Johnny B. Badd comes out of the crowd and fucking Pearl Harbor's DDP. One thing that stuck out to me, so you know they go through into the crowd for a second and come back. Why the fuck was there a random ass bucket in the front row that he hits DDP with? Do y'all remember this?
I remember him hitting him with a bucket.
Dude, like, is it a goddamn spittoon for these fucking rednecks or what? Like, there's just a goddamn bucket in the front row, a metal bucket, and fucking Johnny B. Badd just clocks DDP with it. Another thing that stuck out to me, so, you know, they start off hot. They're brawling. They're fucking punching each other in the face, brawling all over the ring. They get back in the ring, and then they're like, okay, let's fucking wrestle, and it's a goddamn headlock. Like, why the fuck would you start the match off so hot and then just go into boring-ass rest spots?
I was thinking the same thing. I was like, they're beating the shit out of each other in the crowd, and now they're tired, and they're going to sit in a headlock for 10 minutes.
Okay, one thing that I fucking hated, it looked cool, but I know goddamn Mark Mero is not this good. He does a hip toss to DDP about halfway through the match, and he throws it into a pin, and it looks cool as shit. But I watched it back like two or three times. That motherfucker tripped mid hip toss and just accidentally landed on this son of a bitch.
That sounds about right. That sounds about that's like a little microcosm of his entire career.
Holy shit, man. And something that I know you brought up as a note, Gary, but Ty Dillinger stole his gimmick from Kimberly.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the same signs and everything. And she's better to look at. So he should just bring her back. I'm sure she still looks good. And she can hold the signs up for him. That would get over on TV. I'd watch that.
Fuck yeah. Like, how long ago was, like, 40-year-old version made? I saw her titty. It was still good.
Oh, yeah.
One thing, too, I was bored. Like, I literally started, like, looking at my fucking phone, like, texting people. Like, I gave up on this match. You know who else gave up on this match? Was Tony fucking Schiavone. Because halfway through, at this point, he just starts telling us about what the whole fucking card is. Doesn't give a shit what's happening in the match. He's just like, yeah, guys, so later on tonight, we got Hogan and Giant. We got fucking Sting and Flair against the Horsemen. I thought that said a lot. It's not like, hey, let's talk about the rest of the show. It's like, hey, Let's get the fans' minds off of this fucking match.
I will admit it, for a sidebar, that I was a little taken aback by not hearing Shivani goes saying, "Hey, Slapdicks, check out what's next on our show."
Oh, shit. Well, so, fucking Max Muscle, let's go back to him. I thought it was weird. So, okay, to me, so before the days of Max Muscle, who's wearing a tank top and looks like he's wearing Terry Funk's tights, but he cut them off, he matches DDP none at all. Like, before this, you had guys like Diamond Stud, Vinny Vegas, who matched DDP's character. Why couldn't you keep that up with fucking Max Muscle?
The fuck knows. I just know he delivered the worst clothesline in the history of clotheslines at the end of that match.
That was pretty true.
I was embarrassed for him and everyone that's ever wrestled that was kind of the end of the match. But to tie in to the end of the show, I don't know if you know this, but he joined the Dungeon of Doom after he broke away from Paige. He was wrestling under Max, and he was, I guess, a jobber in the Dungeon of Doom for a while.
Well, after that clothesline, he probably should be wearing a mask.
But in 1995, there's no goddamn body else that should be doing a top rope flying axe handle besides Randy Savage. And Johnny B. Badd just does one, and he does the worst goddamn fucking Liger bomb I've ever seen in my life.
Well, to be fair, this was not a pay-per-view that I seen back when I started watching wrestling. So my only thing with Mark Merrow has come via WWF and the Wild Man and that one boxing gimmick he did. So this was actually, I would say, my first Johnny B. Badd match, because that was not the top of my bucket list for wrestling wise to go watch Johnny B. Badd. I just thought that Mark Merrow looked pretty good compared to what I remember seeing in the WWF. I liked it that he didn't do that fucking Wild Man gimmick with the fucking fingers and shit. And I mean, to be honest too, I thought Paige, you know, was a pretty decent wrestler, you know, at this point. I know he probably gets better down the line, but I don't know. Those are just things that made me enjoy the match. I mean, I get it. The match did drag out. I mean, I was surprised they went 17 fucking minutes on a curtain jerking match. But
how you can say that? And we all watched Johnny B. Badd do the fake lucha dive 619 shit. That was the fucking worst. How the fuck can you defend him right now?
Well, he wasn't out there trying to box his wife or whatever, so I guess
that's true.
Going for
him. He saves that for after the show.
Well, and to be fair, also, the next match coming up, that stuck out in my head. And plus, like I said, it was six beers deep.
True, which I'm about like 10 right now. But anyway, let's talk about the really awkward slow motion bump that fucking Max takes when Johnny B. Badd gives him that fucking big punch.
Oh, like, don't even get me started on that stupid punch either.
That motherfucker just slow motion just dies on the apron.
Well, maybe they were saving money on doing slow-mo instant replay, so he was just helping him out.
Oh, fuck you! Like, no!
I believe I heard him go,
I wish he just potatoed him. That would have been the best spot in that entire match if you just blast him right in the teeth.
I even reviewing this match in my notes, I have Johnny B. Badd wins. What was the finish? I don't even fucking remember.
Somebody got hit with the belt. No, somebody got hit with the belt.
Fuck cares?
Yeah.
Well, goddamn, Johnny B. Badd's new TV champion. Let's move the fuck on.
Yeah, we've already spent way too much time on this match.
And let's
like
bring
the
on
real
the
goddamn
booty,
match went way too fucking long.
And let's bring on the booty man.
Oh, fuck. Okay.
Was he Zodiac booty man, or what? Which gimmick was he in at this
point? Zodiac.
He's Zodiac at this point. So, anyway, real fast before we get to that, the next thing, Shivani, between every match, is hyping the fuck out of Giant and Hogan in this monster truck. The biggest fucking match in wrestling history. Fuck you. Who gives a shit about these goddamn monster trucks? Okay, I know this is the South. This is wrestling. Fuck you.
You probably would have loved it if they had Richard Petty there or something. I don't know.
Eat a dick. I know I'm from fucking the South. I don't give a shit about NASCAR, sir. Okay? Anyway, go to the next match. From the land of yin and yang, it's the Zodiac.
It wasn't the... And I read here that the Zodiac or Booty Man, or whatever the fuck his name is, he's filling in for Kamala.
Kamala, yes. Yeah. So, okay, the backstory behind this, from what rumor is that Kamala was upset he had the job to Savage, which I think is bullshit, because Kamala, in at least his last, like, year or two with WWF, jobbed to fucking everyone. I don't know.
Macho Man. It's like one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. You can't job to him. Who are you going to lay down for?
Fuck yeah. So I don't know if it was like an issue, because this match was short. Like, super goddamn short.
It's a minute 30.
I don't know if that was the plan from the beginning or not, but I thought, now let's talk about this for a second. I don't know if you guys caught it. Bobby Heenan tries his goddamn hardest to explain why Kamala's not there. Okay, so Bobby Heenan says that Kamala's told Kevin Sullivan he was scared of Randy Savage. So Kevin Sullivan got so mad at Kamala, he beat the piss out of him, kicked him out of the Dungeon of Doom, and replaced him with Zodiac. As absurd as that sounds, like A+ for Bobby Heenan for at least fucking trying to explain this shit. Because they had definitely announced it, at least a Nitro or two before the pay-per-view, that it was going to be Kamala. So Bobby Heenan gets my fucking stamp of approval in WCW for trying on this fucking pay-per-view.
Well, his explanation lasted longer than the fucking match.
That's the goddamn truth. And why does Savage always have fans trying to fucking get in the middle of his matches?
I didn't know it was a man at first. I thought it was like an angle. I'm like, who's running in on this match? And then I'm assuming Savage is going to just fucking potato a fan if they run into the... I mean, that's his history anyway. He's never been hands-off on a fan if they run in on his matches. So I just assumed it was some sort of angle or some bullshit. Because he walked right by him and he could have blasted him. They were holding him right there. He could have really laid into him.
Like, I give a huge credit to everybody in this match. From fucking the referee to fucking Beefcake to fucking Savage. Because Savage ignored the shit out of it. And both of them were professionals to know, let's peel outside to the floor and get the fuck out of the way, and the referee just tackles the goddamn fan, which apparently was a woman, too, which I didn't notice either. Yes!
Yeah, they had a hell of a time getting them out, or getting her out of there, I guess, because about another 30 seconds later, you see them dragging that person back across the screen in the background, trying to get them all out of the ringside area.
They fucked up going to the hard cam, because they should have went to one of the people on the floor or went to Roman cams, because... So, okay, the fan's out of the ring. Let's get Savage and fucking Zodiac back in the ring. The hard cam comes back up, and all I'm paying attention, fuck the match. I'm watching fucking Doug Dillinger and all these motherfuckers drag this bitch to the back.
Taking her back to the Dungeon of Doom.
Oh, fuck. But yeah, so yeah, what'd you say, a minute 30? Fucking yeah. Savage goes up top, elbow drop, fucking 1, 2, 3, Savage wins. Now,
well, no, 1, 2, 3, and then he kicked out at 3.5 because, you know, Beefcake has to fucking do that.
What did he fucking spook him? Fuck him.
Yeah, fuck. Seriously, I was so pissed off. I hate that in general. I think it's fucking bullshit that people do that, especially on their finish. Kick out at like 3.5 like you're some goddamn superhuman. But goddamn Brutus the Barber Beefcake kicking out of Macho Man Randy Savage's fucking legendary elbow drop at 3.5. Fuck off.
Exactly. And I've met that motherfucker in person. Fuck Brutus Beefcake. I hate that son of a bitch.
You got any Beefcake stories you care to share?
No, I don't. Other than he's just a piece of shit, I don't give a shit, fuck, or a damn if he hears this, fuck him.
No, he ain't gonna hear this.
I don't give a fuck. Fuck him. He's a piece of shit.
Well, he is Hogan's bottom, so...
Not anymore! Well,
He'll probably be listening to this show while he's out parasailing.
Oh, too soon. Too soon. Anyway, so, okay, let's backtrack for just a second, guys. The story behind this match is, you know, so Luger came back. Yeah, there is. There is, believe it or not. So Luger comes back to WCW on the first Nitro. And from the get-go, Savage does not fucking trust this son of a bitch. So the Giant and the Dungeon of Doom are attacking everyone. And Savage and fucking Luger start pointing fingers at each other. Well, you're working with them. Well, you're working with them. So I don't recall how the fuck this got set up. But the idea was they both accused each other of working with the Dungeon of Doom. So if they both won their matches tonight at Halloween Havoc 95, they would wrestle each other. So let's fucking fast forward now to Randy Savage beats fucking Brutus, goddamn Barber, Disciple, fucking Booty Man, Zodiac, goddamn whoever the fuck he is, Beefcake. In a goddamn minute 30, and Savage has advanced to the finals of whatever the goddamn grudge match is. Let's get the fuck away from this match.
I will say one high note is that I did like, I forgot all about the electric guitar Randy Savage theme that he got in WCW.
I hate that shit so much.
I didn't say whether I liked it or not. I just said I forgot all about that.
Okay, well, that's different. I hated it, man. Like, I'm waiting for Pop and Circumstance. I thought it was just a Ooh Yeah and the original song, not this goddamn Jimi Hendrix ripoff. Fucking, that was
sure
fucking weird.
Was just in something they plugged in on the network?
No, that's legit, dude.
Mm-hmm. Is that some of the music they put in on the network is just like MIDI themes from like the beginnings of the internet. I don't know where they find those, but they're the worst fucking garbage on earth. Like, you can't watch anything ECW on the network because of the music. It just completely ruins it, in my opinion, but not to go on a tangent, which already is.
That's our whole fucking show, dude.
Yeah,
don't
we
worry
don't
about it.
Train wreck television or radio, whatever. Fucker.
The most inspirational Bo Dallas type fucking promo of Johnny B. Badd. With the quote of, I'm the new TV champion, I'm never going to quit, and this motherfucker was in WWF within 6 months. 6 goddamn months, guys. Gene's talking about some restaurant, pulls Johnny B. Badd back in, and keeps talking about what kind of fucking drinks he's going to order later in the night. But it was just so funny because Johnny B. Badd's like, I did this for the fans, I did this for the kids, and fucking Mean Gene's like, let's go have a Bloody Mary at this fucking restaurant. Like,
Gene was probably blasted, too. Ooh. You'd have to be. Can you imagine paying $30 for this fucking show?
Oh, fuck that. Was it that much in 95?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
I'd have been pissed. I remember, this is actually the first time I've ever watched this all the way through. I had never seen, like, the monster truck thing before this show. I watched it in, like, squiggle vision, like, when I was a kid, if you know what that is. Like, you turn, like, the old box TVs, you could turn back on the pay-per-view channels and watch it through the blurriness and hear the sound. But, yeah, because as we'll get to the monster truck thing, I actually thought the fucking monster trucks fell over the side of the building. That was what I was kind of looking forward to. I was hoping they had, like, this giant budget and, like, dump these monster trucks over the building. And then when I actually saw what happened, I was so disappointed.
Let's get to the next match, which is the fucking revenge match of Hawk versus Kurosawa. Watching the four Nitros beforehand, this shit had zero fucking build. They didn't mention it. They didn't talk about it. They talked about shit. Because Hawk was legit injured. So a Clash of the Champions, whatever the fuck Clash of Champions, 31, Kurosawa breaks Hawk's arm. Now, Hawk sold the shit out of it at Clash of the Champions. He didn't sell shit this whole goddamn match.
I have a theory on why he was angry about his arm being broken.
Okay, go for it.
That was his beer-drinking arm, and he was pretty pissed off that he couldn't drink.
Holy shit.
He's mad because he can't go have drinks with Johnny B. Badd and Gene after the show.
Maybe this is where he switched over to pills.
Oh, shit.
Ah, too soon, Gary. God damn.
Too soon. It's 25 minutes. If Vince Russo can have him stagger off the Titantron, I can make a comment like that 20 years after. Fuck you guys.
Let's talk about the goddamn match for a second.
Why?
Wait. There's a goddamn video package before the match, alright? And it shows Kurosawa breaking motherfucking Hawk's arm, okay? So, he breaks his arm, Hawk's off TV. It comes back. They don't fucking mention it. There's no build-up to this shit. But, the match itself, Hawk is like a fucking house of fire, beating the shit out of Kurosawa. Hawk takes a fucking shoulder into the turnbuckle, and immediately no-sells the shit. I don't give a shit who you are. When you rush into the fucking corner, and you shoulder tackle the goddamn post, it should hurt, right? Not
if you're all filled up.
Your Hawk. Fuck no! He turns around and punches Kurosawa right in the goddamn mouth.
He's all hopped up on somas.
Fuck yeah!
He's not gonna feel anything.
Hawk fucking powerbombs the shit out of Kurosawa. Then, one of my favorite spots of the whole goddamn pay-per-view, he goes on the apron and runs and clotheslines the shit out of Colonel Robert Parker. For no goddamn reason!
He's Robert Parker, that's a good enough reason. Clothesline him.
But it's like watching a video game. You know, when you're playing like any fucking video game and you're wrestling against somebody, it's like move, 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 move. That was this fucking match. No one sells. No one slows down. Fuck, it ended in a goddamn out of nowhere. Kurosawa just pins him.
Well, this is where I fell asleep at. But after you went through all of that, this is probably the most 2017 match in 95.
Kurosawa did a better job than Hawk.
Well, you could seriously, though, say that, you know, Road Warrior Hawk would fit in this time, you know, this time period right now in 2017. Let's just do moves for no reason and then just ends all of a sudden.
But, okay, so Hawk loses, right? Because I think it was like a Samoan drop, and Kurt Robert loses, grabs his leg. Hawk takes a fucking move, takes a three count, and is right the fuck back up, no selling the shit out of the whole goddamn match.
Because he doesn't know where he's at?
Possibly.
He probably didn't want to lose to Kurosawa in 3 minutes and 15 seconds, so he's like, fuck it, I'm just going to do whatever I want.
And let's talk about what Kurosawa did after this. Anybody know what? That's right, because it was nothing.
I was going to say, I've never heard of this man before in my life.
Let's go to the next spot of the show, which is the greatest Randy Savage promo of all fucking time.
I don't know if it tops Cream of the Crop, but I'll give it. I'll get it right up there.
No, fuck you, Joe. It does. Because...
get hot about it.
I'm hot as shit about it. Macho and fucking Mean Gene go on a tangent toward each other. Macho's going on about this and that, and he looks at Gene for no goddamn reason, goes, your mustache is crooked. And Mean gets hot about it and goes, well, your beard's a little sideways, but I'm not trying to take any shots at you. They both get quiet. It's an awkward conversation. And Savage looks at him and goes, it's okay, man.
So basically you're saying we stole our whole back and forth from this interview in 1995.
Yeah.
Okay.
Honestly.
Just making sure.
Well, yeah, you know, in the words of Rick James, cocaine's a hell of a drug.
Oh, shit. All right. Next match. Sabu with the Sheik versus JL. Really?
I was excited for Sabu. No, I was just busting balls because I knew that you would get hot if I said that. I didn't know who Mr. JL was, and then I looked it up and it was Jerry Lynn. So I got excited that not only do you have Sabu, you have the Sheik, and you have Jerry Lynn in the match. I was all for it.
I don't know if you guys noticed this. His tights design was the exact same design as his gear he used in ECW as Jerry Lynn, just with a different color. Same exact format.
Hmm.
Are we going to talk about how Sabu almost killed his uncle in this match?
We'll get there. Yeah, so Sabu comes out. He actually comes out to La Parca's theme song in WCW.
Did you notice the giant pirate sword that his uncle was carrying around?
You goddamn right, because he almost killed himself and or Jerry Lynn later on.
Mm-hmm.
And he's carrying that sword while he's got blades on his fingers, ready to freaking cut up somebody.
So at the very beginning of the match, you know, Jerry Lynn, or baseball slides Sabu. I don't know if you guys noticed, Sabu ducks the baseball slide. But Jerry Lynn accidentally drop kicks this motherfucker right in the forehead anyway. Sabu then takes control, does an Asahi moonsault, and moonsaults every goddamn body by accident.
And kicks his uncle right in the face. I replayed that like 4 times in slow motion, just him getting kicked right in the fucking chops. If he would have held his sword up and was swinging it around just at the right time, he would have stabbed himself right in the fucking face with it.
Oh, fuck yeah. It was the fucking worst, man. But, you know, so he kicks his uncle in the face. He fucking gets Jerry Lynn. This match is all over the place after that. Sabu's running off the apron, going into the fucking guardrail. Jerry Lynn's doing shit that doesn't need to be necessary. Jerry Lynn powerbombs Sabu. We've had 4 matches so far as fucking pay-per-view, and we've had 3 goddamn powerbombs. Someone needs to talk somewhere in this fucking shit, because everyone's doing the same goddamn moves by this point.
Oh, it gets worse as WCW goes along, because when the cruiserweights really pick up and that becomes a division again, there's like 10 powerbombs in every match.
It's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, and then they just disappear. You don't really see them too often now. But, yeah, I remember right during that big, the biggest period with the Cruiserweights in WCW, it was almost every match. There was at least 4 or 5 powerbombs.
So, you know, Sabu does the, I call it the Eddie Guerrero, but it's that flip over senton, but Sabu would do an extra little bit of rotation. He'd be on the apron, flip over, and leg drop his opponent. Well, he doesn't leg drop Jerry Lynn. His ass just crushes his fucking face.
Yes.
It was so fucking bad.
I was like, wow, Jerry could tell what Sabu had for lunch there. I was like, man, I had to hurt.
So that's 3 spots where somebody could have died in this match.
Oh, yeah. Sabu does a fucking Arabian moonsault, which 1, 2, 3, the match is goddamn over. Out of fucking nowhere.
Well, they had to get to the other 6 or 7 matches that they had that were 1.5 minutes long. They can't, God forbid you give them more than 10 minutes.
Hogan must pose.
But also, the Sheik must goddamn fireball, but no one else fucking knew about it, because it wasn't caught on camera. Jerry Lynn said on the shooter interview, he had no goddamn idea that Sheik was going to fireball him in the fucking face.
He took it straight to the freaking face, like, I didn't expect it, and I had to rewind that and to see it, because I was like, what the hell was that? And then I saw the fireball, I was like, damn, he just took it right to the freaking face.
The Sheik needed to get his receipt for almost being killed earlier in the match.
That's true.
But that was his own goddamn nephew!
He probably blamed Lynn. He ain't gonna go after Sabu, he's probably gonna blame the other guy.
That's his mill ticket.
Yep.
What I thought was funny about this, Shivani completely no-sold it. He's like, oh, he blew fire in his face. Let's go to the next match. But
Shivani was had enough at this point. He's ready to go home. Fuck the show.
But like, so like, by this point, so we've had Savage and Zodiac, Sabu and fucking Jerry Lynn, and they've been super fast matches. Anybody have the time on Jerry Lynn and fucking Sabu?
3:25.
I really think that fucking Johnny B. Badd and DDP went way too long.
About 15 minutes too long. Yeah.
So anyway, between the match, you know, they're hyping the fucking monster truck shit, yada, yada, yada.
Is this the Hogan motorcycle thing?
So, let's go to the master first.
Okay, so.
Let's go to the fucking master. King Curtis. Okay. So, for a 6-year-old Court, I was fucking scared as shit. Not as scary as Papa Shango, but King Curtis was scary as fuck. So he spouted off on his Ultimate Warrior type promo nonsense about the fucking moon and the stars and all this bullshit. And Sullivan is trying to be super serious, which, as in hindsight later on, is hilarious. Because you get cartoony-ass Master, serious-ass Sullivan. It just doesn't work well. And they're fucking, you know what they're talking about? The goddamn monster trucks. Who gives a shit?
When I watched this, I had to, this was another spot I rewound back. I didn't know who that S was. At first, I thought it was they took Abdullah the Butcher and decided to do an Island of Dr. Moreau gimmick with him and just, like, cover him with something. And then when I found out it was King Curse, I, okay, and then him talking, and then, yeah, Kevin. And then the sad thing is, Kevin Sullivan, you look back at his stuff in Florida and even with Crockett, it's like, he plays the good, you know, demonic character, but, oh, the Taskmaster.
Well, even in WWF in 87, when he was managing Kamala, he had great shit.
Yeah.
I just want to know whose job it was to apply flour to King Curtis's body. Who got paid to do that, and how much, and maybe that's what the bucket from earlier was from. Maybe that they were, it was the makeup people when they're putting the flour in all the rolls and the crevices and trying to find the wet spots with the flour, they vomit in that bucket.
I'm thinking that what they did was they took one of them big industrial fans and then just cut up a whole bag, bunch of bags of flour, and just threw it in there and just right in front of them.
He literally looked like a big ball of dough with like a dress on. He just is just big and pasty and covered in flour.
And very sweaty looking.
Super fucking sweaty. But here's what bothers me. Now, so they're fucking hyping the shit out of the Yeti, which bothers the piss out of me because, okay, if the giant is the ultimate immortal and he's the son of Andre the Giant, which we'll get to later, who gives a fuck about the insurance policy?
When he kept saying Yeti, I kept thinking of that big, tall Amazon woman that wrestled for TNA that the Colt Cabana and them would call the Yeti. That's who I immediately thought of. I was like, wait a minute, that's too early. That's down the road.
Right. So anyway, let's skip to the next spot on the show of Hogan giving away a fucking Harley Davidson. Now,
to Todd Pettengill, right?
Right! So Hogan is in a very NWOS gear. Now, the rumor is, and I can say this after the fact, this was to tease a Hogan heel turn. I don't fucking buy it, because he doesn't act like a heel. He's wearing black. That doesn't mean you're a fucking heel. But let's have Hulk Hogan no-sell this serious goddamn angle we've had running for 3 months now, and to give away a fucking Harley Davidson. Look, the giant broke your neck twice by this fucking point. And you're like, hey, brother, fuck that. Here's a Harley. No, goddammit. And Kevin Sullivan shaved off your fucking mustache. Your goddamn stash. This is serious fucking business.
So he didn't have mustache alopecia.
Goddammit.
That threw me off. I was like, holy shit, where's his mustache go?
And did anyone notice Sullivan definitely, on Nitro, shaved in a Hitler stash first before he clean shaved him?
Oh my god.
Go back and watch that goddamn Nitro. I'm not lying to you. That's a true story.
What I hated about this whole promo was not the fact that they were like, ah, let's give this motorcycle wave to this couple or whatever. It was the local dealership getting a plug on a pay-per-view that I'm sure they're probably out of business by now. But let's give you some sweatpants and a fanny pack and a hat. And I'm just like, Jesus, just get to the Ming and Luger match. How much more are I going to watch this? And then I hear the guy go, well, I'm going to ride this down all the way back down to Alabama. Well, oh, God. Fuck.
Well, anyway, I guess
move it along.
That's our way to fucking segue into Ming and goddamn Lex Luger.
I want to say something real before we go into this. Is they had a World War III promo right before this, and they showed four fucking guys on there. And I thought it was weird. They showed one of them was Sabu. So were they? Did they have like big plans for him? So I think it was Flair, Luger, and Sting, and Sabu on this fucking promo for World War III. I thought it was that kind of just stuck out to me that they had Sabu on that promo as well.
Sabu was still listed on the goddamn VHS cover. And he was gone and went from the fucking WCW within like 3 weeks of this fucking pay per view.
Yeah, I don't even think he was on World War III.
No, he wasn't. Nowhere near it.
I don't know. It just stuck out to me that maybe they had some plans for him. Because, I mean, those are three big names, three of their biggest names on their show that they're promoting for this massive pay per view. And then they randomly threw Sabu on there.
No.
I don't know.
No, I'm with you. I noticed that shit too. Like, and he is name dropped on this shit on the VHS cover. And nope, I don't know if it was big plans or they knew he was like not a big name, but he was getting recognition from all the PWI magazines and shit. I think that's where they were going with it.
Yeah, on to the next shitty match.
On to the next shitty match is Ming versus goddamn Lex Luger. Now, I love Haku / Ming. I love him, okay? This match is garbage.
Well, it is Luger's in it, so you can only take him so far.
So, you know, the backstory of this match, I've already covered it earlier. If Luger wins his match against Ming, he can wrestle Savage later on. Who gives a shit?
I like how you take the Savage match with the Zodiac was a minute. This match was 13 minutes. And then the finals is only 5 minutes. Like, who the fuck come up with?
As we see later, Ming and Luger are on the same side. So why would they wrestle with each other for 13 fucking minutes?
I'm guessing Ming didn't know. What I thought was funny, y'all heard me spout off on my hate against Beefcake earlier. Did you notice that the Taskmaster, nor none of the other fucking members of the Dungeons of Doom, came out with Zodiac. But the Taskmaster made it a point to come out with Ming. Even the goddamn Dungeon of Doom didn't like Brutus Beefcake.
Well, they knew that Zodiac had, you know, Hogan had his back, so they just figured we don't need to come out for him.
So this match was so goddamn long. First, this shit was the worst. You know what was the first thing I noticed about this match? Was the tombstone before Luger's promo, because there's like pyro shooting up from Luger's fucking, before his entrance, and it's behind tombstones. The goddamn tombstone said Crockett. That was in poor taste, goddammit.
I did see that.
Bobby Heenan had no idea Ming was in a Dungeon of Doom. He asked Tony Schiavone, is Ming in a Dungeon of Doom? Why is he wrestling Luger?
In his defense, there was like 30 people in the Dungeon of Doom.
I mean, yeah. But, okay, so the story behind it is Ming was brought in at WCW by Colonel Rob Parker in the Studs Table, or whatever they technically call it at WCW. The Dungeon of Doom brought Ming in, gave him the golden spike for his sins. So that's the backstory behind it. Did anyone notice that when Lex Luger went to grab Ming by the legs, you know, the catapult into the corner? That was the most awkward shit I've seen in a long time.
Until we get to the Yetai coming out later.
Oh God damn it. Don't jump too far ahead. Anyway.
I'm trying to speed it along. I've had enough.
We're trying to. So, Luger is really the heel. He's cheating the whole goddamn match.
Big fucking surprise there.
And, Ming, okay, this might be just me noticing this. He has what I call the Davy Boy Smith hairstyle. He's got the dreads in the back, but the top of his head is curly as fuck. You can tell his hair is not long. He just got goddamn like fucking weave in his head. Like, it's so bad.
Shit.
Rest holds. Fucking Bobby Heenan and fucking Schiavone start talking about the fucking Detroit Red Wings and how Jimmy Hart put sugar on the in the Giants' fucking gas tank in the fucking monster truck match.
Wait a minute. They said that?
Yeah, I swear to God. I sent my fucking notes.
They talked about the Giant bottoming out for Jimmy Hart.
Yes, they did!
That's awesome.
Blah, blah, blah. Most awkward goddamn finish in wrestling history that fucking Kevin Sullivan awkwardly kicks Lex Luger, meaning gets disqualified, Luger wins. This match was bullshit all the fucking way around.
Which is a microcosm of this whole pay-per-view.
Wow. What an episode. Due to some time constraints, we had to cut it a little short, but I hope you've enjoyed part one of our Halloween Havoc 1995 review. Next week, we'll be reviewing the second half of the show, as well as what happened the rest of the year in 1995. And don't forget, go like us on Facebook at Ringside Chat Podcast Network, go join our group on Facebook, Ringside Chat, and go follow us on Twitter at Ringside Pod. For Gary and Joe, this is Court. Thank you as always, and see you next week.